Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
The Saturday Panel on Off the Ball.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock. You can text us on 53106. We're also streaming live as well now. You can watch us on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope on Twitter, for YouTube and for Facebook. At Off the Ball is our Twitter handle. We're also streaming on the new OTB Sports app. You can download that now for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in the App Store. So last week we spoke to three intercounty managers in the GAA about the return of Gaelic football. Today we're joined by three men involved in club rugby throughout Ireland about the return of the game, how it's been in recent months during the pandemic, the amateur game, how these new provincial conferences can work, this new series we're having from September, and what the future of the amateur club game might look like in the future. So we're joined by Scott Deasy, an out half who once played in the European Cup semi-final for Munster and then ended up guiding Lansdowne to AIL success. He's currently the backs coach with the Dublin club. Shane Layden, who played at underage level for Ireland, then Connacht, and who is now the captain of Buccaneers and Athlone. And Matt Brown, the Wigan native, who's doing a very solid job coaching Old Crescent Rugby Club in Limerick and Rossbrien there in Limerick City. Gents, how are we getting on? Good afternoon.
Hey, how are you doing?
Afternoon.
Great to have you on the show, lads. Love to talk about club rugby over the next hour. So many people around the country, over 200 clubs are, you know, volunteers, participants, players, administrative staff. I know myself, I'm in the car draw, Matt, at Old Crescent, down at Rossbrien. My mother's in Limerick City. So actually, we'll start with you, Matt, and we'll bring everybody else in as well. What's it been like over the last few months? What's the break been like? How's it been during the pandemic for you as club people? And I'm sure you've missed the crack of everybody being around, Matt.
Yeah, it's been a strange one, all right. Obviously, with everything closing down so quickly, I think people are all at a loss thinking, sure, we'll get back to pre-season, it'll all be normal. And then that kind of didn't happen. And yeah, we were all a bit at a loose end, really. So just from a Old Crescent point of view, we actually did our reviews over Zoom. We did a lot of communication with the players because they were kind of disappointed how we finished up, although we hadn't had the worst season. And what's happened is we've actually ended up going back on the pitch before we would normally, because I think everyone had cabin fever, so they were just mad to go for a run. So we got our COVID officer in place, and he told us what we couldn't do. And so we had fellas running in straight lines for a few weeks on a Tuesday night, which any other time they would have told you where to go. But I think they were that mad to get out. They were up and down the pitch like nobody's business. So, yeah, we're tipping away now. And obviously the new structure's coming in. And it's, you know, I suppose we're in a strange position in Munster, because just Old Crescent finished 8th out of 15. So we could have ended up in the first or the second conference. And we've ended up in the first. Pros and cons to each, I suppose, but geez, we'd want to be training a bit harder coming up against some of those fellas. So yeah, it's been strange, but we're tipping away, you know, and the lads are in good spirits, so it's all good.
What's it been like for you, Scott, at Lansdowne?
Similar to what Matt was saying there, and that it all came to an end very quickly. So we had to kind of, you know, shut down the club, shut down the training program, shut down the season effectively, and then we kind of gave everyone a break. We kind of just said, go off, you know, make sure your families are safe, make sure you're all safe yourselves. And then we kind of touched base again, kind of, you know, 6-8 weeks later, and said, as it stands, we had no direction what the season was going to look like. And then, you know, over the last kind of 6 or 8 weeks again, then the season began to take shape. So we started back with the players about 3 weeks ago now. And similar to what I said, you know, very, very basic stuff at the start in terms of straight line running. Very restricted in terms of numbers, very restricted in terms of exposure to players and a lot of the protocols you had to follow. And then from last week, I think on July 20th, you know, we entered the next phase. So we're slightly bigger groups now. We can get into more kind of position specific skills and stuff. So we're getting back into it, but we've actually just given the lads another week off now, because we've gotten some clarity on the shape of the season and when it kicks off. We said, you know, we're probably going too hard too early. So we've given the lads some time off again.
Shane, captaining Buccaneers, are you just chomping at the bit now, or have you been really suffering from the fact that you haven't been able to play?
Yeah, it's been strange. I suppose Scott and Matt both touched on it. The season ended so quick. No one kind of really knew what was going on. We were all predicting, oh, we'll be back in the pitch in 6 weeks or 7 weeks. And, you know, it didn't materialise. You know, we were back in two small groups there a couple of weeks ago on a Saturday just to split it up, backs and forwards, get back in the field. We have a new coaching team in this year, so they have new ideas. We had a couple of Zoom calls and Skype calls just to get the point across of what way we're looking at it and how we're going to do things. I suppose, yeah, just as a player, we're all really excited to get back. I suppose the dreaded preseason isn't as dreaded as it usually is. There's an excitement there, you know. As I said, guys are doing straight line running and just so happy to be out in the open air. It's different, and it will be different for the next couple of weeks. And I suppose it's something that we're going to get used to. But I suppose the social aspect and the fun of rugby is back, and that's the main thing.
Absolutely. Guidelines, guys, around COVID-19. We know, say, the provinces, there's testing there. What's the focus been regarding regulations about protecting the welfare of players, of staff, of everybody involved at the club at the moment? Start with you on this one, Scott.
So we've had similar to what the guys are saying, we've had a COVID officer appointed. So Kieran Walsh, who's also our Honorary Secretary, has taken up the position of COVID officer. So he kind of tells us what we can and what we can't do. And the club have also leveraged a kind of an online form, I suppose, that you have to fill out on the day of training every week. So unless you fill out the form, you can't train. And then you have to, you know, confirm that you haven't been in contact with someone. You have to confirm that you haven't been abroad or that you haven't been advised to isolate. And obviously, given, you know, we're entering August now, which is kind of, you know, traditionally holiday season for lots of families and people, you know, they're very strict on anyone who's coming back from a country that's not on the inverted commas green list, making sure that they stay away for 2 weeks. And then obviously, if you're exposed to anyone, you stay away as well. So the COVID officer is very up to date on what the government are advising and what NPHET are advising. And we're following that very, very strictly, just because there's too much at stake in terms of, you know, if it could spread like wildfire through a club if you get one positive case. So we're probably being very conservative and taking the right course of action there.
Is there a worry, guys, with the fact that you are still amateur? I was speaking to Mike Ross on the panel a few months ago, and he was telling me, like, in a kind of a jokey way, that, you know, there'd be a scrum pox anyway. It's a very physical game. You got scrums, you got mauls, you got rooks. Is there an underlying concern among the people that you've spoken to, the club, your fellow players, that somebody might be asymptomatic and then could test positive, and then we have a stop-start situation? Or is there a confidence in the guidelines that you're following will minimise the risk?
Yes, I suppose from Buccaneers' point of view, you know, the guidelines are there, and they're proven from a medical point of view. And as a player, you know, there's always going to be that doubt. But, you know, if the guidelines are there and if players take self-responsibility, you know, if you bring your own water, if you make sure you're filling out your documentation before training, you know, if you're ticking your boxes. And I suppose one of the biggest things that we've outlined as a club is if you don't feel well for any reason, whatever it is, just sit out the training. You know, there'll be plenty more sessions. You know, we don't want one person to bring down the whole squad or a number of people to bring down the whole tournament. And it's just being smart about it and just making sure that, you know, you're ready to play and that your body's healthy and that you're doing the right things off the field to make sure that when you come together as a group, that the risk is minimised.
And
we'd be much the same with that, lads, with the logistics that went into to trying to get people on the pitch were through the roof. Our director of rugby, he had staggered start times, and it's okay for us just turning up at the time slot. Mm-hmm. The amount of work he must have put in, you know, again, with the COVID officer. And I suppose you have to put a lot of trust into these fellas, eh? And like Shane was saying there, you just trust the medical professionals. And if you stick to the guidelines, you keep your fingers crossed that you stay free of it, hey?
Yeah, that's incredible. Like the planning behind the scenes that's been going on between our director of rugby and chairman of rugby, and then obviously the coaching staff and the COVID officer and the club executive committee to make sure that, you know, we're not exposing the club, whether it be medically or otherwise. And then there's all of the, I suppose, the learning and education you have to give the players. And then you just have to hand it over to them and say, look, you know, these are the guidelines, these are parameters, these are the rules. And you have to give them, I suppose, a little bit of, responsibility to uphold those. And if, and as Shane said, if they are feeling a bit under the weather, that they just don't come. And there's no stigma attached to that, or there's no taboo at all. It's you're doing the right thing. You're putting the club first. You're putting your family first. You're putting, you know, I suppose, public health first at that stage.
What they're going to do then with the club season is they're going to have this energy men's community series and women's game as well. They're going to have local conferences effectively in Connacht with yourself, Shane, and with Buccaneers. You've got Ballina, Galway Corinthians, Galwegians, and Sligo. You've got a Leinster conference, Scott, with Clontarf, Dublin University, Naas, Old Belvedere, Old Wesley, St Mary's, Terenure, and UCD. And then you've got Munster conference then as well with you, Matt. With you've got Cashel, Cork, Conn, Gary Owen, Highfield, Shannon, UCC, and Young Munster. Then you've got semi-finals. You've got a final for the Bateman Cup. Then next year, you've got the leagues as they were, but no promotion or relegation. Does this kind of sound good to you guys? Matt, for example, you were doing well in Division 2. There's a chance of promotion to be 2 years now without it. Does it sit well with you, the way they've kind of structured this to get people back on kind of a safe level from a regional point of view and then get back into the way it was?
Yeah, I suppose there's two sides to it, really. Firstly, you completely respect the way they've gone with it and why they've done it and keeping it provincial-wide. You know, I believe that probably is the right thing. And look, it will be nice then in the second half to play in your own division, you know. That I suppose I read an article from one of the other coaches in Limerick, and, you know, he was saying that it's all great and they've done the right thing health-wise, but he was questioning whether did we really need to do away with promotion relegation. Now, I know it's half a season and I'd say there's pros and cons, and, you know, look, they've gone with it. I suppose for the clubs in 1A, they still get a chance to, you know, they play their AIL and there's a lot to go for, whereas when you're in any division lower than that, you're fighting to try and get up there. So kind of that's been taken away. But I suppose that's kind of the selfish look at it, you know, and there is a bigger picture. And we did have to sell it to the players to say, look, this, we might not be able to go for promotion, but there's a lot to play for. And the, our club in particular is really trying to take big steps forward, and we've got huge numbers and it's thriving in that respect. And so we have to, you know, put the spin on it that we're actually going to go up against fellas who ultimately we want to be there. Now, look, us going up against Cork Conn, I mean, you might roll out the cricket scoreboard for that one. But look, we'll have to take our medicine on the odd occasion. But still, I mean, to get that kind of a game in Ross Bryan, or and even the local derbies against Gary Owen, Munster, like Limerick's such a small rugby community, as in everybody knows everybody else. So there'll be some great nights around the town, I'd say, as in nights out at the rugby grounds, just because, you know, everyone knows everybody else. And look, we'd be massive underdogs, so we've nothing to lose in that respect. I suppose, like I say, the only thing is taking away that chance for promotion in the second half of the season. It's a tough one, but look, there's smarter people than me making those decisions. So look, we go along with it and we do what we can to get forward, really.
Are you sold on the chain?
Yeah, I suppose the best that the Irish have done, they've made a decision early and they've stuck with it and they've put a plan in place, you know, and we can all kind of see where it's going and what we're playing for and what's ahead. I suppose one of the biggest things with the Connacht Conference is, you know, obviously we do the Connacht League is a bit of a pre-season tournament prior to the AIL normally, and it's usually played out like that, you know, it kind of starts slow and you build towards the AIL. So I suppose there might be a bit more of a niggle to the derby games and a bit more needle in them coming back, so that'll be exciting, you know, playing probably home and away for Connacht as well will be exciting. So I suppose I agree with what Matt's saying from after Christmas, you know, without the promotion, you know, if you're not in the running for the top four for a semi-final, it might be a bit difficult for lads to get up to the game. But I suppose it's an opportunity, and in particular for Buccaneers, it's an opportunity for us to develop again. You know, another year, we're kind of in a bit of a transitional period where we've younger lads coming through and we're trying to develop players, and, you know, it'll get lots of our squad players and extended squad opportunities to express themselves for the next season. And for us, that'll be really important.
And Scott, for you with Lansdowne, a lot of local derbies. I suppose the frustrating thing is you can't have thousands of people there back where the way it was 20 years ago. You actually now have the chance for local games against teams in Leinster, but it's a little bit limited with the fact that we got all these restrictions.
It is, but I think, you know, if you go back 2 months ago, there was talks that there might be any league at all. So yeah. I think to have a competitive series before Christmas, while not perfect, is obviously better than nothing. So we have, and you know, obviously we're very fortunate that the nine teams that are in the first conference in Leinster are all 1A or 1B teams. So it'll be very competitive, and it'll set us up very well for the AIL series, and then that happens after Christmas. So I think, you know, you can look at it both ways, but I think, you know, you've got to put your positive hat on and say we're getting competitive rugby. Hopefully we might be able to get, you know, some sort of exposure or release of some of the professional players to bring the standard up again. And, you know, think the goalposts might have changed by the time we start on September 26th, that more players or more people might be allowed to
Yeah, and on the flip side, Matt, like no relegation, it does give you a chance as a coach to reset without any consequences to say, okay, we're going to look at the people who are involved here in the panel and try and progress some of the younger players.
Yeah, it does. That's double-edged with us. It certainly does from the squad. I suppose what's happened in Old Crescent the last couple of years, we've kind of reinvigorated the 20 side of things, and we've got some talented kids coming through. So I suppose we've just got to find the balance now. Like, you don't want to be throwing too many young fellas in against Gary Owen and Cart Conn, but by the same token, you know, geez, if they come through something like that, then they're in a great place come the AAL. So yeah, like, I mean, it's really exciting, to be honest. And I think once we got over the initial shock, the players have bought into that now. So they're all relishing a crack off some of the bigger teams. And like you say, yeah, we've nothing to lose in that regard. Like, any result we get would be a massive positive. And, you know, it's plus, I suppose, I think there's a restriction. They can't actually play contracted players against us, you know, which, look, that's they've probably done that for safety reasons. But, you know, it makes it a bit more of a level playing field. And sure, who knows, I suppose, once you get out on a Saturday evening and see how it goes. But no, it'll be good. And yeah, like I say, we can get a few young lads playing against some top level teams, then that's going to stand to them in our long term plan, I suppose. So yeah, we'll see how we go.
Yeah, we're speaking to Matt Brown here of Old Crescent, Scott Deasy from Lansdowne, and Shane Layden of Buccaneers about club rugby, the return of it, how it's going to look, and maybe the future of the game as well. We've got a chance here, as I said this last week to the Intercounty lads, to reimagine how certain sports and certain structures look, because we've got a bit of time to think about it and not just go through the cycle of playing matches and looking at divisions. We're going to talk about this a bit after the break as well, but finance and how you've been able to sustain what you do. Because Neil here, our producer Neil Tracy, who is from Raheen, like, he's involved in this, Matt, in this Pig and Porter Tag Rugby extravaganza every year in Limerick with Old Crescent. You know, missing that, like the generation of the funds, you've had to rely, I'd say, a lot on sponsors. How has it been financially for you guys to just keep the show on the road?
Yeah, well, I certainly, you know, I'm not kind of party to all that kind of side of things in the club. However, I do know they've been struggling. And I think our president came up with it, and there was a few raised eyebrows when he did. Obviously, we lose the Pig and Porter, it's massive. But he came up with a GoFundMe page, and I think we got in there early. And look, we just went to the club's supporters and sponsors and just said, look, can you give us a dig out to get through the year? Because we you know, like, the income's gone. Like you know about, that we run a car draw, okay, that's still going. Pig and Porter's massive. All our fundraisers now, thankfully, I think in the next week or so our golf classic's going to go ahead, but I think revenue obviously will be down, and there's no take over the bar obviously because it's closed. But you know, we were in division with three northern teams, so you know, you're taking away three kind of big trips there. Maybe we'll catch one of them in the second half of the season, but there will be a reduction in that. And I think, you know, a few things have had to be put on hold around the club and renovations and stuff like that. So, look, I think everyone's got to cut the cloth accordingly. I haven't heard anything that we've gone in too much in the red yet, but sure, we'll see how we go over the next month or two. But look, I think everyone's aware they're going to have to adjust their expectations. And I think if we can just weather the storm, then they can start putting a plan in place for next year, and I think there'll be a massive fundraising effort through the year as well, maybe around, like, I think one thing was said by the IRFU was that they were talking about galvanising the club game. Now, if you're playing within the province, and if you can kind of get matchups with your opposition clubs, with your seconds and your 20s, and make a full day of it. You know, maybe there's opportunities there. You get people in the gate, and I know there's restrictions, so you can only do so much. But, you know, there is a certain way to really, you know, get the atmosphere in the club back up and try and bring people back into the club game. So I think there is a positive from that point of view. Like I say, if you have one, like I know in the Southern Hemisphere, like what one club would take all its teams to another club and you play throughout the day, and the whole thing's a big party. Now, obviously, we'll have some restrictions, but if you could get to a model like that, I'd say you're not doing too bad, and you can start building from there, maybe.
I think the problem for the clubs at, you know, across the country is, you know, every club has their own different ways of generating revenue, depending on whether they're a community club or whether they're, you know, very well located in a certain city or whatever. But the big problem for the clubs would be tickets. So obviously international tickets are a huge source of revenue for nearly every club. But with the restrictions in terms of how many people can go to internationals or how many people can go into the Aviva, I think how the IRFU prioritizes, you know, where those tickets go to. Do they go to ten-year ticket holders? Do they go to corporate sponsors? Or do they get distributed via the clubs? That would be a big revenue either loss or gain to the clubs. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that pans out in the next few weeks.
Yeah. I suppose from a player's point of view, there's, you know, we're aware that there will be cutbacks, you know, whether it's gear, whether it's stuff like that. Like our main sponsors, you know, you're not going to expect them to fork out as much money after probably taking a hit themselves of being closed. You know, the clubhouse is closed. But there's opportunities, I think Matt touched on it, there's opportunities there for the players to give back, to get out into the community, to do a bit of sponsorship, to get out, raise money for the club, you know, and in the same time kind of getting out into the community and people seeing us doing it. And, you know, you might bring a few supporters into the gate in the following week or even maybe next year when things settle down. You know, one thing that we're doing in Buccaneers is we're doing a bit of a run walk cycle, and we're doing it as it's the same distance that we'd be traveling on a normal ALLC year. So it's just short of 3,000 kilometers, but half the proceeds go to the Westmead Hospice, and then half the proceeds come back to the club, which kind of it helps as well, because, you know, people want to support the medical facilities as well, given all that they've done for us. And then it also brings a bit of revenue back in for us for funding the season, because, you know, running a rugby club in the AAL is not cheap.
Yeah.
And I suppose, you know, you're talking to three AAL teams here, and you know, we're probably in better stead than some of the junior clubs around the country, you know. And you know, I know my local club, my hometown, Carrick and Shannon, you know, they'll have a lot of work to do. You know, you're competing against Gaelic clubs, you're competing, you're out. You know, you have to get into the public and you just have to work hard on it. But
yeah,
I suppose the good thing is that, you know, people my age and my generation are probably back working from home and they're back in the community, and it'll be great to see them out there, you know, bringing something back.
Sorry, Shane, we just got to take a break there. So Shane Layden, Matt Brown and Scott Deasy on Club Rugby in Ireland. Get your comments into 53106. Back after the news with more debate. Thank you. And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. This is the panel, 53106 for your text messages. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. We're also streaming us live as well now. You can watch us on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope and Twitter at Off the Ball, on YouTube, on Facebook. You can also watch us on the new OTB Sports app. Download that now for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in the App Store. Club Rugby is our focus of conversation this afternoon. Get your questions in for the lads on the panel. Lansdowne's Scott Deasy, Shane Layden of Buccaneers, and Matt Brown of Old Crescent. Delighted to have you on the show today, guys. We were just speaking before the break there, before two with you, Shane, especially on how clubs like Buccaneers have been able to try and get the show to remain on the road with fundraisers, that kind of thing, and also helping out the community. Have you seen more interest from people? Obviously, maybe people now are looking around themselves a bit more. I know I am myself, and thinking, well, there's a local GA club, there's a local rugby club, I might get down to support that, or a League of Ireland club in this changed time. Maybe there's an opportunity in this crisis for people to get a bit more connected with their community, connected, say, with Buccaneers, Old Crescent or Lansdowne. Shane, have you seen that with the fundraising initiatives you've been doing?
Yeah, look, I suppose before, you know, the whole lockdown and the coronavirus, there was so much sport on the telly and there was so much professional sport everywhere that maybe the club game and the Gaelic game, the club Gaelic game, club rugby game kind of got forgotten a bit. And I suppose, you know, with no fans going to any games, that it's going to draw a bit more attention, because, you know, people are more conscious of what's going on in their local community, of how Buccaneers are getting on, or how your football team, how Shanigans are getting on. And it's massive, I think, that, you know, that we do get out there, because the more we get out there, there is an opportunity. There is a big opportunity to bring fans back into the club game. You know, you see videos of the past of 10,000 people at a Buccaneers game. You know, that's unheard of at the moment. And, you know, obviously we can't do that, but down the line, maybe we can create a model that will get that many people back into watch games. And I think one of the big things, you know, with a local kind of Western region, is that it draws attention. You know, if Bucks are playing Galwegians on a Saturday night, that is a game that people want to see. You know, maybe it loses a bit if we're playing a Northern team. You know, the people don't have the rivalry there. But if we're playing a Weegians or a Corinthians or a Sligo ball now, all of a sudden everyone's drawn to it, because they remember the times when they played against them. And they remember, you know, no one wants to lose to their cousin from Galway, or you know, Ireland's such a small country that the matches will have so much more meaning to them. And I think that's a model that maybe, you know, further down the line it could be reviewed. I suppose we found, you know, people have been so good. You know, people are obviously, money has been cut back for everyone, but they're still giving back to their community, and they still want Buccaneers as a club to be able to survive.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that across the country as well. You know, fellas who stepped away from the game for work reasons, or now they're actually back. They were abroad and they're back now, working in Ireland, because they're working from home rather than paying rent in London or whatever. For example, a friend of mine, Ronan Corkery, he's wondering how he can get back involved in the club game. He hasn't played in, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. Very good player back in the day, but now he's looking to get back involved in his local club. How can he contribute that way? Because I suppose they see the importance of the club, whether it be soccer, rugby, Gaelic football, hurling, to the community spirit, and I suppose the social fabric of that community. So if that's an opportunity, or is that something we can explore further because of this pandemic, great. I think everyone will benefit from that.
And Matt, are you seeing that down in Old Crescent as well?
We would be seeing very much of that. Same as that, sorry. I think I was hearing stories that when they put the GoFundMe out, they were getting contacted by people who probably had maybe been to one game last year or something, just because of, you know, where they work. Like Scott says, they could be anywhere, but people are reconnecting. And then touching on what Shane says, I have to mention our players, because they've been very good, even over the last year or two. They do a lot of fundraising themselves, and we have a core group who really try and kind of, if the club's running something, they'll really get behind it, you know, and not just going to an event, but even the pushing of it as well. They do a lot of volunteering around the Pig and Porter and stuff like that, because, you know, and obviously they get the benefits then. And I think, you know, the more they can be seen to do that, and the, you know, I suppose the club player, you know, it's not all about what can be done for the player. I think that people need to realise now that how important these clubs are, and you know, and really kind of give something back. And you know, we'd be pushing our lads to come down and help out with the underage, and when it finally goes back, and then you hope if that gets a bit of momentum, more and more people get involved. And I think if you can draw people back to it, you might not recreate the glory days, but you know, long term, if you can get a bigger member base, it's only going to benefit. And sure, the players as well, once they start playing and there's more people there, and you know, there's more atmosphere, it becomes more enjoyable, and your connection with the club only gets stronger from there. So I think that probably would be the big one, where I think if we're going to get something positive out of this whole mess, I'd say that would be the avenue we go down, and just get the clubs booming again, or as much as is possible.
Yeah,
why can't you have both a strong, healthy provincial structure and a good club scene as well? Text in here in 53106. However hard the senior rugby clubs are going to have it, it's with the small junior clubs who are really going to struggle, already short on finance and bodies. Scotty's fitter than ever. He beat one of the young lads in a Bronco the other day. Hashtag one more year. What is a Bronco? I don't know. Is it an American car? What the hell is it?
It's. I think it's one of the fitness tests that the pro teams are using these days. It's a kind of a shuttle run, out 20, out 40, and out 60 and back. So I said I'd give it a lash there on Tuesday when they were testing the players, and I surprised myself, but I think it was a one-hit wonder. I don't think I'd be able to back it up.
Hi, lads.
It's 4.5 minutes of hell.
Is it? Okay.
4.5. If you hit 4.5, Shane, you're doing well. I didn't get anywhere near that.
That's what I was going to say. Or 7 or 8 minutes for some of our forwards.
lads, if I'm doing that, you can tie me with a calendar if you want.
Hi, lads. Just a quick one. Why didn't they just finish the leagues from last year in January? Promotion is what it's all about.
Yeah, I think that, look, that's a question that's been bandied about a lot, and there's pros and cons to it. But I think, you know, a lot of clubs that have had a very strong position to say, you know, we've played 14 games, we're top of the league by X amount of points, you know, we should have been promoted. And I think if the RFU chose to go down that route, I don't think you could have had much complaints. They've obviously chosen not to do that. They've chosen to scrap all promotion from last year and relegation, and for the season coming, which, you know, Matt has addressed already, saying it's an interesting mindset you've got to get yourself into. Personally, I suppose I wouldn't have had any objection to promotion and relegation based on the standings of last year, because we had, you know, completed over 75% of the season, but they chose not to.
The glory days you're talking about there, Matt, 20 years ago, we all know the stories of, say, if it's Gary Owen and Young Munster and Limerick, or Corcon and Cork, or, and all these clubs, you know, you're drawing massive crowds. The provincial game in Ireland wasn't strong in the amateur era, your inter-pro derbies and that, but obviously with Munster and Leinster, the fans traveling abroad to these games in France and England, the professional game, these provinces becoming hugely successful with all the European Cups that they've won. I think it's six between them, Munster and Leinster and Ulster as well, 1999. Have the RFU left you to your own devices? I know they're giving $500,000 to clubs around the country and for a few months during this crisis. But do you feel like you've got enough support as clubs? Do you feel a bit detached? The academy players are coming in at times. Is there good rapport and a good synergy between the governing body and the clubs?
I think everybody's coming at it with a different agenda. I mean, if you're in a club, your priority is your club. So people are looking, oh, what's best for us? What can we do? The IRFU obviously have to take the broader view. I certainly think there's some initiatives where I think, you know, they're doing the best they can, and their revenues are massively hit. But I suppose you could go around different clubs and they'd be like, oh, well, we don't get this and we don't get that. I think we kind of, like we talked about the players, we need to change the mindset and how can we work it together. And it probably needs people who are slightly removed to look at the big picture, as opposed, you know, there's always going to be a difference of opinion. So I suppose it's hard to say whether I personally don't feel like they've discarded everyone, but I also don't think they can please everyone, and that's never going to happen. Like, you know, I mean, Scott said there about not having an objection of teams getting promoted and stuff, but like, and it probably only affected a couple. But you look at Highfield, and geez, your heart has to go out to them. Like, they were dominating the division, you know, and they probably were pretty nailed on and going, you know, and that's a tough one to take for them and feel for it, but you know. I presume if you were to take a step back and say, well, they're not doing it to spite Highfield. It's literally, look, we have to make this blanket decision, and that's the way it goes. And I'm sure that's the case for a lot of decisions, both financial and rugby-wise. So yeah, I don't think it's too much to say that they've discarded everyone, but I do think they could take this opportunity now. Like Dave said, the clubs can reconnect with the community. It's a great opportunity for the RFU to reconnect with the clubs. And you know, geez, what's the harm in now a few academy lads being, I mean, this will probably affect you, Scott, more than it would us, but you know, there's rugby there to be had for the academy players. And you know, imagine the quality of 1A if they're all playing week in, week out, and that's got to draw people in, I would say.
Yeah.
When the, you know, when yeah, they're playing.
I think the actual product, the AAL product itself, has never been as strong, because I suppose I've been fortunate to be involved in the game for the last kind of 12 or 13 seasons. And, you know, even in the days when, you know, Peter O'Mahony and Zeebo and Andrew Conway and these guys were playing, the actual quality of the games wasn't as high as it is now, because the level of coaching, the level of facilities, the support we get from the clubs has never been greater. So the product itself is brilliant. And if you can add in some of those kind of, you know, academy players or professionals who are on the fringes more often, your own, it's you know, it logically the crowds are going to follow. and the engagement's going to follow, and the media companies will follow. And it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy there, where it just gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And now that they're taking this opportunity to try and realign the global calendars, to try and realign all the fixtures, maybe there is a place for the club game. But I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little bit aspirational there, but you know, hopefully they can find some area where we can fit in, and we can really start to contribute to the overall rugby landscape.
I suppose, Scott, that's probably one of the biggest arguments. You know, if a couple of lads were released from Leinster Academy development contracts and Munster Academy development contracts, you know, would a Lansdowne versus Cork Con on a Saturday be just as good as a Leinster A versus Munster A? You know, from looking at it, it probably would be, like, and you know, the players might get more from it because they'd have the opportunity to do it week in, week out. You know, and it would also bring the province back into the community as well, back into the club scene more. And you know, it would grow in doing that. It would grow the club with the province, because you know, you're going to be getting high quality rugby, and the lads are going to be playing. And you know, instead of being back for one game and then you mightn't see them for five games, they're going to be there, and they're going to care about promotion. They're going to care about winning the league, and they're going to care about winning the Bateman Cup. You know, and I think that would massively increase the level of the AAL, and it would bring it to the next level that we're looking to do.
Did you feel Shane and Scott, when you were with Connacht and Munster respectively, you were in a bit of a bubble?
Yeah, I suppose it's difficult, and I suppose we've both had the opportunity to, Scott obviously played a lot of high level, but we've had an opportunity to be in the provincial setup and then to be in a club setup. And I suppose when you're in the provincial setup, you know, I was in the academy in Connacht, and I would have still played a lot for Buccaneers at the time. But your main goal and your main focus is to get to the next level for Connacht. And I know that's a selfish way of looking at it, but any professional sports person is selfish. You know, their main aspiration is probably impressing the coach on a Monday to a Thursday rather than impressing the coach on a Saturday for Buccaneers. You know, and then you flip it and you go to the other side and you become the club player, and you're on the outside. You're looking at the guys coming back to you, and you're wondering why they're not maybe not even giving it all, because they do give it all. It's just their head isn't fully there. And it's hard because, as you said, the Monday to Thursday is where they put the hand up most of the times. And I suppose one of the big things in the last couple of years is that we've had Andy Friend come to a Buccaneers game, you know, and that's massive. It's massive for the academy players, the development players, and the club players, because, you know, you want to impress the Connacht manager whether you have a chance of playing for them or not.
Yeah. But if those fringe players are under the impression that the province are interested in their performance for their clubs, or you know, they get consistent feedback based on their performance by the provincial coaches, whether it be the academy manager or whether it be the assistant coaches for the senior team, that would mean, you know, they'll have to buy into playing with their club then. Whereas, I'm not sure, I haven't been involved in a long time, but if they're not getting that feedback regularly on their performance in the club games by their provincial counterparts, you know, why would they invest emotionally or mentally in playing for that club unless it's their local club and their home club? You know, there's a lot of situations where, you know, I'm from Crosshaven, I'm not from Cork City, and I played for Cork Con for 4 years. You know, it's not my home club, it wasn't my home club at the time. So if I was trying to get onto Munster, did they really care how I played for Cork Con? I don't know if they did or not. So you have to kind of make sure that the club player is aware that their performances for their clubs are being monitored regularly, being assessed, and they're seeing the growth, or they're seeing the progression into the provincial setup from there.
Is there a conflict, or is there a bit of an us and them, because if people have different mindsets given where they are in the game, that it could cause a friction? Or do you see that, or just people, when they go past the white line, everybody's together?
If there can be, but it is coming around that there isn't. You know, I suppose in the nature we are with Buccaneers, we are a feeder team for young players to go into Connacht. And I suppose, you know, don't get me wrong, that's definitely what we want to do. We want to get more players into the provincial setup. And, you know, it's just about picking and choosing the guys you go after to come and play for Bucks. You know, you want to get a good standard of a fella, not just at rugby, but you want to know that he's going to buy into what the club is trying to do. And I suppose that's one of the biggest things that we've looked at in the last couple of years is, you know, A, you want to bring your local lad and keep him, but B, then if another guy comes down from Leinster or Munster to Connacht and he's looking for a club team to play with, that, you know, you do a bit of research and you see what sort of a guy he is and if he's going to buy into the Buccaneers ethos on a Saturday.
You can text
him. I think the big thing is that the top teams, especially in 1A, and obviously by virtue of their position in the lower leagues, is that they don't want that chopping and changing every week of a player becoming available for one game in every four. What they want is consistency of selection so that they can build those combinations or that relationship between players. So you'll see the likes of Connor, even Lansdowne for the last few years. We've had some guys on the fringes of Leinster, but the vast majority of our team selections are the same week in, week out, because we have that core nucleus of players or that core spine of players that are club players only. They've either come out of the professional system or they're trying to get into the professional system, or else there's a couple of guys who are just happy playing Division 1A, you know, regularly. And they're the guys that we base our team around. And if we get the odd pro player in, you know, we might be able to accommodate that. But the better clubs or the more successful clubs recently have built their teams on players who'll be there regularly.
And Matt, just on that, what Scott is saying there, if you got promoted to 1A, 1B obviously first, but even up to 1A, would you get professional players? Would it be a tipping point when you'd actually get them?
To be honest, it's a funny one. It's strange that, as in, I suppose we would become a viable option. Right now, I think in 2A, I don't think there'd be any issue with maybe an academy player coming in. Now, it's just not happened. Now, I have spoke to Peter Malone actually on the academy players coming up to Limerick, and he's been very open. If there's a hole, let him know, and because obviously if they are going to go back to clubs, he probably does want them playing. But it's just the way it's fallen. They do seem to, and I understand it, because it makes sense for them to be playing the highest rugby week in, week out. I suppose if it's up to us to try and get up the leagues, and then that becomes an option. Now, having said that, much long before I came, the club's success in recent times is built on a group of individuals who've come from the under sixes up to the seniors, and that's the model we've gone with again over the last 2 years. Eugene McGovern's our director of rugby, and he's put a lot of work into the 20s, and he actually coaches them himself, and we had some success last year, and we've got a much stronger group this year again, and I think we're looking to be self-sustaining so that we don't want to ever be relying on pro players. Having said that, it would be great to have one or two, you know, into the club. Like Scott says, you don't want to be changing your team every week. And I think just having them I remember when I was coaching up in Galway, that, you know, to find out that you're going to get someone on a Thursday night who you want to play, I don't think that's the answer either. I mean, they're either in or they're not. And I understand if there could be a good bit of planning. And from what I hear, I think the planning is improved from back when, what I used to hear about in Galway, it was kind of, you know, get a phone call or what. And I've heard sometimes maybe the bigger clubs in Limerick would have said, you know, it's kind of messes with things if it's left last minute. But I think if there's good planning goes into it and fellas realise that, like, okay, so you're going to be available for these 2 weeks, so maybe you could actually train with the club these 2 weeks. And not necessarily the contact element, but just so that they have more of a connection. And I think that comes back to what Shane was saying. I know personally, I've noticed that for me, coaching actually becomes less about coaching over the years and more about the environment for the players. Because when you get the environment right, the coaching bit's quite easy. And that's what Shane says. You don't want some fella who's coming in just to tick a box for his province. Ah, oh, geez, I played a game. You want him to come in and actually care. And I wouldn't want anyone in Old Crescent coming in if they didn't care or if they didn't put something back in. I mean, they're in such a privileged position to be getting paid to play the game. So, you know, what can you give back? And you know what? I'm sure 90% of people are like that, but you'd want to be sure about it before you kind of go and disrupting what's been working for you to accommodate extras. So that would be my take on it. I don't know what the lads feel about that, but I think if you can get the right individual into the right environment, then you're laughing. But otherwise, there is potential pitfalls, I think.
Yeah, and as a coach, I think you might agree, Matt, that you want to see if a professional player or academy player is coming back and they're playing a game for you, you want to see them show the difference between what a professional player is and an AL player, to show your other players that this is the level you have to get to if you want to get to that professional level. This is the level you have to train at, this level you have to prepare at, this is the level you have to perform at over an 80-minute period. Because I think in the AL you have a lot of really, really, really good players, but, you know, maybe not able to string it together for 80 minutes, or you know, don't have the skill set or whatever. So you want to see that gulf in class to show the other players this is what you got to get to. And if you can marry that with the emotional or mental buy-in, I think it can be very, very beneficial. But if they're coming back ticking a box, it's not going to help anyone.
Yeah, you want them to raise the standards as well, Scott. And, you know, and most of the time you do, you get guys, and that's the buy-in we're talking about. If they buy into training on a Thursday night as well, you know, you get the standards raised. You know, majority of the times when you're playing with better players, you know, everyone else raises their standards because they don't want to be left behind. And I think that's one of the biggest things, and that's one of the best things that the province can give back to the club, is that, you know, by sending some of the academy lads or the fringe players for the senior team back to Buccaneers or to Crescent or Lansdowne, it brings them up, you know, it develops them, it raises their standards, it improves their skills, you know, you might learn something off them, and that's what you're looking for, you know, it's giving back to, it's like what we said about player giving back to community, it's the professional player giving back to the club.
We're kind of on the final stretch here of our chat about club rugby with Scott Deasy, Shane Layden and Matt Brown. Lads, just to kind of, as we come towards the end of our great chat, what's the most enjoyable part of this? Part of being the club, like, for example, Scott, you were at Munster, as I said, a semi-final of European Cup. You're at Lansdowne. I saw the picture there with your family. You're winning an AIL, or you're playing well. And Shane as well with Buccaneers. You're talking about the local rivalries. Matt, you're from Wigan. You're down in Limerick, and you're coaching. What is the most enjoyable part of what you do and what you love doing?
Matt, you can start.
Well, for me, guys, I won't lie. I miss playing rugby every single day. I absolutely miss it. And for me, I love the coaching, and it's probably the closest I can get. And I think I've been lucky with the clubs I've coached at, that I've just been around some great people. And like, I suppose the whole match day for me, it's great putting a lot of work in, and then the enjoyment comes on the match day when you see that, you know, fellas are literally putting it all out there. They're giving it everything. And I suppose we're on the amateur side of the game, so that they work the socks off through the week. You go up north and you get a result, or even if you don't get a result, it's like, you know, they're coming together after, and, you know, on our bus, you have somebody like Alex Simpson singing songs all the way back. And it's just great crack. And it takes me back to when I was playing, because obviously I'm a bit older than the lads, and it's some crack on the way down. And, you know, you kind of keep that balance between working hard and then you have a bit of a blight at the end of it. And sure, for me, Limerick is such an unbelievable rugby city. It's like there's just you walk down the street and everyone's got a bit of an allegiance, and there's always a bit of crack, and they'll always be, you know, slagging you off about one thing or another. But I just think that when it comes to a match day and the before, during and after, for me, you can't beat it, really. That's just me, though, being an old man.
And I would echo that. I think the main thing for me would be just the two things. One is the friendships you build out of it. And, you know, I've played rugby with guys, you know, 10, 12 years ago who I haven't seen since. But I know that if I see them on the street tomorrow, you know, we can get straight back into, you know, either a serious conversation or a bit of a sagging match, which is always nice to have. And then secondly, I think the life is so serious these days between work and, you know, I'm fortunate to have a family. So there's a lot of kind of serious things going on. And then you get to go and have a bit of release with the lads on Tuesday and Thursday night on a game on a Saturday, and you kind of get that instantaneous result. So you win or you lose, and you lose together, you win together, and you have a bit of crack together on the bus, or you have a few pints afterwards or whatever. And I think, you know, money can't buy that. That's just really, really good fun with good people is the main thing.
Yeah, it's hard to explain, I suppose. Over the whole kind of lockdown, rugby became so, at the start, unimportant, and then it became so important again. You know, the social aspect of getting back out onto the pitch, having a bit of fun with the lads, you know, back training, back running, you know, just that competitive nature. And then, I think Scott touched on it, that the ability to be able to have a serious conversation with one of your rugby friends and then have a slagging match in the exact next conversation is probably the one thing that it has. You know, it's so enjoyable, yet it can be so serious as well at the same time. And I think you put your body on the line to win with your friends. And I think that's one of the most important things, you know. And I suppose Matt touched on it about keep playing, you know. I've had fair share of injuries, and lads probably look at you and say, why do you keep going back? And, you know, you can't explain it, but you just do, because you love it, I suppose.
Well, Shane Layden, Scott Deasy and Matt Brown, you've been great sports to share your stories and your views on club rugby at the moment in the AIL, and we wish you all the best success for the rest of 2020. Thanks so much for joining us on Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk this afternoon.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.